Well, problems between siblings is not new, but our guests have some new ways of handling those problems. Larry Mueller here, our guest today, Myrna Schur, been with us a few times in the past. She's a developmental psychologist from Drexel University, created the social-emotional learning programs for children and the problem-solving approach to discipline. Her books include, among others, Raising a Thinking Child. Also with us today, Sue Allen. She's a family living educator from Marquette County, UW Extension, Wisconsin certified prevention specialist, and she's been using Myrna's approach in her work. So we're going to talk with them about that and see what you have to say. What problems do you have with your children? Join in the conversation. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org, or you can also post on our Facebook page title, The Larry Mueller Show. And Myrna Schur, welcome. Thanks for being with us today.
Hi, Larry. It's great to be with you again.
Yeah, and Sue Allen, thank you so much for joining us again.
Well, thanks for having me.
Tell you what, Myrna, first let's talk about the basic concept behind raising a thinking child.
Well, Larry, it's a problem-solving approach. It's asking children to think through and solve problems for themselves. You know, what does a parent or a teacher or anyone who works with children do when a child nags or demands or cries or takes a toy from another child or whatever age the child is, whatever is relevant? You can tell that you can, if the child is creating a problem, you can yell at him, you can punish him, you can spank him, you can send him the time out even, which is also only conjures up resentment in the child. He's not thinking about what he's doing except how to get revenge over the child who got him in trouble. Or you can tell him what to do and suggest in a more positive way, or you can even explain why. You know, if you hit your brother, he might hit you back. But that's all doing the thinking for the child. And what I have researched over the past almost 30 years is that you can teach children skills, that they can decide for themselves what and what not to do and why. And you can start this when the children are only 3 or 4 years old.
It sounds great, and I've got some examples of my own. But, Sue, you've been teaching this program. What's been the response from the parents who use it?
Well, parents really like this approach. At first, they're a little skeptical because it's a hard idea to get used to, that you should be asking your 4-year-old or your 5-year-old for some ideas about what they think might be a different way to approach a solution or a better way to approach a situation. But once they get through it and they begin to use it and understand it, the feedback is pretty immediate and very positive, that, oh my gosh, I couldn't believe the response I got. And how calm things were so quickly, instead of the yelling or the escalating or the crying that can occur sometimes with demanding or punishing or timeouts, as Myrna was saying. They've been very positive about it. It's a little bit of a challenge to make sure that they remember to use it, because we're really used to the first three kinds of approaches that Myrna was talking about. We're really used to saying, now stop that, or why don't you go do this instead, or be sure that you understand how your sister's feeling. You know, you don't want to take that from her. Again, that's doing the thinking for them. This approach turns that around and asks questions of children that gets them to really internalize that sense of what's happening and own it, rather than it coming from the outside from a person who's telling them what to do.
Mm. And, you know, when it's a problem between two children, let's say a brother and a sister, sometimes the problem seems trivial to the parent, but it's very important to the children. One example that comes to my mind is an 8 and 10-year-old were arguing who's going to sit in the front seat in the car. And they were really at it with each other. Well, you sat in the front yesterday, and it's my turn. And they really, you know, and the father said, why is it so important who sits in the front seat? Which says to the children that, that what they're thinking and feeling isn't important. And so it's very important that the parent realize that what might be trivial to them is not trivial to their children.
I can give you an example. I was just talking with some parents about how they've been using this, and one of them was describing how her 8-year-old gets pretty upset when her 4-year-old sister is playing with the dollhouse or a certain special toy that there's only one of in the house, and she wants to play with it. So, you know, she'll holler at her, you know, the older daughter will say, you know, give me that, you know, I want to play with that, and kind of pull it away. And then, of course, the younger daughter's, you know, hollering. And so mom said that she used to just kind of swoop in and say, now you listen here, you don't be taking that from your daughter, from your sister, and, you know, that sort of thing. And then there'd be escalation and crying and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And she said now what she does is she'll say, something like, how do you think it makes your little sister feel when you pull that toy away from her or snap at her like that? How do you feel when she's playing with your dollhouse? So she starts to explore the feelings, and that immediately helps her older daughter kind of calm down a little bit, feel heard, feel understood, and then she can ask her a couple more questions. What's a different way to get some time with the dollhouse? What's another or better solution to this situation? And then her older daughter can kind of think through that with her. And they find that that ends up in some pretty creative and very happy solutions on a regular basis.
And, you know, also, children aren't used to being asked what they think and feel. It's kind of a shock to their system. They're used to being told what to do in either a positive way or a negative way. And children, you know, I've heard 4-year-olds say things like, I solved the problem today, or that was my idea, and they feel so proud instead of, you know, and overpowered.
What was, I want to go back to the dad in the car.
You've experienced that, I take it.
what would have been a good response from the father in that situation when the two kids are fighting about who gets the front seat?
Well, the father that I know of asked the children, can you two think of a different way to solve this problem so you won't end up yelling at each other? And there was a big pause. And the older, the 10-year-old, said to the 8-year-old, well, you can have 2 turns today, and I get 2 turns tomorrow. That's a good idea, isn't it? And they kind of looked at each other and smiled, and that was the end of the arguing.
That's
because they're asking the child to think. You see, children are much more likely to carry out an idea if it's theirs than if it's ours. And that's why that question was so powerful.
You know, here's something that Lucia posted on Facebook, and it doesn't quite go along with what you're saying, but I'm wondering what your reaction is to this. She said that one of the best moments of her parenthood is when she asked her feuding 3- and 5-year-old sons to stand face-to-face and say what they liked about each other. They laughed so hard they forgot what the issue was.
Well, you know, that's not a bad idea, but you do want to teach children to solve the problem at hand as well. And what we do in the program, in the Raising a Thinking Child workshops, is we play games with little kids with words to have fun with, like the words same and different or is and is not. And one very shy 6-year-old was romping around the living room. This is a curtain. This is not a balloon. This is not a house. And he was laughing. And, you know, the reason that was so important is because the mother said he never really talked much before, but he was having so much fun with the words that it kind of opened him up. But why do we play with those words? So we can ask the child, can you think of a different way? Is that a good idea or not a good idea, using the word not? And so they learn to use vocabulary words as part of their problem-solving thinking.
It's kind of like if you're having fun using these words, Then when it comes time to sort of a more serious, not-so-fun situation, those words become a little bit lighter to use, a little bit easier to use. It becomes like, oh, we can solve this problem between us just like we were playing with these words before and solving these problems before. And I think it kind of takes that weight off of those trouble situations and lightens everything up and lets kids be part of making it better again.
You know, you could almost feel, I could almost feel the gears turning in that little boy's head
when,
as he was saying, this is this and this is not this and so forth.
Right. Another parent shared with me that her older son, who's about 12, she's been using this with him recently because he hasn't remembered that his little brother is only 3. And so little brother comes along and pulls older brother's hair. And older brother will turn around and pull little brother's hair right back. And, of course, that's not a good way to solve the situation. So she asks him, you know, do you think it's a good idea to pull your little brother's hair? How old is your little brother? How old are you? And can you think of another way that you could solve this situation? What could you have done instead that might have been a better idea or a different idea? And he stops, thinks about it. Oh, yeah.
And, you know, we ask also a question if he says something negative, like, well, I could kick him in the shins instead. I'm making that up.
Right.
You know, and say, well, what might happen if you do that? So we teach children to think of potential consequences to acts. And then we say, well, do you want that to happen? And then what can you do so that will not, using the word not, happen? And, you know, again, kids are just not used to being asked questions like that. And some can answer them already and some, you know, have to learn the skills that we have in our program to learn how to think that way. But it guides behavior, Larry. That's the important thing. It teaches empathy. Empathy is so needed in this world today. If more kids grew up empathic and caring about, you know, how other people feel and caring about their own feelings, which is important, you know, maybe we'd have, you know, fewer problems when kids get older in this world and more compassionate world.
You know, I wanted to bring up, I agree with you there, and I want to bring up sibling rivalry, which is something that I'm sure occurs quite a bit. How would you define it? And, you know, is it always a bad thing?
Actually, that's a very good question. I'm glad you asked it because a lot of parents get really upset when their children argue with each other. But unless it's destructive, it can actually be quite constructive and healthy, and it's very normal. And what's good about it is children learn in a safe environment that people have different points of view than they do. They can practice their problem-solving skills. You know, and when kids are little, you can lose a friend, but you can't lose a sibling. And so it's a safe environment to practice thinking about what can I do? What might happen if I do that? Well, how will the person feel? How will I feel if that happens? And that's a very important set of questions for children to think about. And as I say, it's very normal and healthy, and parents should be, I mean, one mother, I said, what do your kids fight about? And she started saying, oh, they fight over toys, they fight over, you know, she mentioned this and that. And then she said it would be a shorter list to tell you what they don't fight about.
Yeah.
You know, it's not uncommon, and it's not a bad thing, unless it gets to the point where they physically really hurt each other, then you need professional help then.
It's a bit of a dance, wouldn't you say, Myrna? You want to make sure that you're close enough to sort of observe how the fight or the squabble is going. You want to let them work it out as much as possible. You want to be able to ask some questions to help guide their thinking and help them learn the problem solving. And then there are times when you just let them use what they've learned and figure it out on their own. And as you said earlier, that You step in when children can't work it out, if there's some sort of a dangerous situation or there's no resolution happening. Or
yeah, you don't say, serious. Is that a good idea if a kid's about to bop a kid on
right.
the head with a board?
Right.
But you can still save the situation, and then when everybody's calmed down, you can talk about how he felt when he did that and how he thinks the other child feels. You know, we just don't spend enough time talking about our feelings with kids. We're too busy telling them what to do all the time.
Talking today about dealing with conflicts between your youngsters, Myrna Scher, developmental psychologist from Drexel University. One of her books is called Raising a Thinking Child. Sue Allen, also our guest, family living educator from Marquette County UW Extension. Callers online. But there's still a line open for you at 1-800-642-1234. You can email us at talk@wpr.org or go ahead and post on our Facebook page titled The Larry Mehler Show. I'm Larry Mehler. Jill Nador, on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Great to have you with us here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Larry Mehler, Malik Anderson, our on-air producer, and talking with Myrna Scher and Sue Allen about dealing with conflicts between your children. Hope you'll join in at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mehler Show. Love to hear from you. And Denise in Sparta, thank you for waiting. What's on your mind?
I was thinking about, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I was thinking about when she mentioned having the kids, you know, deciding for themselves. And I wanted to mention, my kids are all now in their late 20s, but when they were 3 and 4, they were just a year apart from each other, and they fought like they were enemies. And I'm talking pulling hair out and anything else.
Sounds like they survived, though.
They survived, and it's funny because they're both wonderful kids, have multiple degrees, and they turned out great. But what I did at that time, feeling lost, not knowing what to do, I went out and I got diaries, and I found a diary book for each of them. And it was the one with the picture with the two little kids kissing each other, and one was a girl and one was a boy, and my kids were girl and boy. And so every day, at the end of the day, I would sit with each one of them separately, and we wrote in the diary. They had to first write in the diary, and they could barely write anything, of course, at this age. So today it's fascinating to read how they tried to write what they felt for that day. But they had to write the good things about the day, the bad things about the day, how different they wished the day would have turned out, and what would they have done different themselves.
All right.
And here they are in their late 20s, and they go back, and, for example, the words in trouble in the book, because they couldn't write, was wrenchable. But we knew what it was.
Well, you empowered them, though. I mean,
that's
a very creative way of getting them to think about what they were doing.
Yeah.
And you weren't yelling and punishing and sending them the time out.
Well, what I'm hearing is that you also were helping them think about the consequences of their behavior and also how they could have done things differently. And that's very much in line with the I Can Problem Solve approach. So good for you.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, that's a great idea, and apparently worked pretty well. Linda in Madison, your turn next. Thanks for calling.
Okay, when my now adult daughter was about kindergarten age, there was a movie out called Baby Stay Out. And it was a goofy comedy about a baby being kidnapped and the baby gets away like several times during the movie. My daughter was watching it and upset because she's watching the acting and going, oh, the mommy and daddy missed her baby. And then there at the end, you know, I'm like, okay, at the end of the movie, everything will be all right. You know, everything's going to be fine. And as we're leaving at the end, the adult in front of me stands up and turns around. And I thought, oh, no, now I'm going to get it because she was loud. And the person says, you have a very empathetic daughter.
Oh,
and it's like, oh, thank goodness, because that's not what I was expecting. And she always from
different ways to look at the same
thing,
right?
Always thinking of other people and animals.
Oh.
Well, different people see the same thing in different ways, and that's beautiful.
Oh, thank you.
And it sounds like your daughter had that more naturally, that ability to empathize and see other children's feelings and perspectives. For some children, that comes easy. For some other children, that doesn't come as easy. And so I find in the classes that I teach that some parents have immediate success because their kids are more ready to do this than other kids who are not quite there empathetically or developmentally. They're not quite, maybe they're 3.5, as opposed to somebody who's 7 and much more, you know, ready for this sort of thing. So there are these differences among kids, and it's not like a silver bullet where you just do what the book says and it's going to work the same for everybody. So that's why during the classes we work with parents to make sure that we can kind of custom make what's going on for them and help give them some inside tips and ideas about what might work better.
Mm. Yeah, and you know what else is the parents who go through these classes, and I guess you'll tell our listeners about those classes before we hang up, but parents come to understand and learn things about their children that they wouldn't learn otherwise. If you're always doing the thinking and the talking and telling kids what to do, you're not hearing what they're thinking and feeling. And parents tell me all the time, you know, I never knew this or that about how he was thinking and feeling, and it changes the dynamics of the relationship.
Yeah, that's powerful.
Jane and Shano, thank you for calling. What's on your mind?
Hi, I just wanted to share a couple things. One is I'm a first grade teacher, and our counselor at school had done the program Raising a Thinking Child as a class for parents at our school building. And
really?
Lots of success.
That's great.
And so lots of kids and families enjoyed it. So that was a neat thing to hear it on the Larry Mueller Show because I like, you know, respect Larry and his guests. So that was a neat thing to hear. And then the
thank you for sharing that.
Yeah, you're welcome. So good job. My second thing was that with my own children, I have a question. My boys are quite clever, and so one time, if I said to my son, "Well, honey, why do you think? Or do you think that was a good choice?" And instead of going, "Oh no, that wasn't a good choice," he goes, "Well, yeah."
So yeah, oh, that happens. And if
then what do you do in
think
that?
He's just joking. You can don't make a big deal of it. Just say,
right.
"Oh, I know you're just teasing me. I know you can, you know, think more about that or something." But don't get all upset and say, "No, it really isn't because," and then go explaining why.
Or don't be a smart guy.
Yeah, don't be a smart aleck. I would just make light of it. And, you know, I mean, we even say Johnny is a boy. Is Johnny a boy or is Johnny a girl? And they'll say Johnny's a girl. And we just say, "Oh, you're just having fun. You're just teasing me," and go on.
Yeah.
You know, you don't think, "Oh, he doesn't know the difference between a boy and a girl."
Yeah. No, he's totally teasing. I mean, they're both older now. He's 12 and his brother's 10. And so, he'll do that. And they'll be like, "You stinker."
kids are very, very smart. One of the parents told me that when she, you know, about 3-4 weeks into the class, her older daughter, who's 8, when mom would start to ask the question, she'd say, "Are you using that class stuff on us?"
Are you using psychology on me?
Yes.
Jane, thanks a lot for calling.
You're welcome. Thank you.
Yep. Let's talk some more about those classes. Tell us about, and maybe Sue, because you've been doing them, you can talk about them. Obviously, Myrna can too.
Sure. The classes usually are about 1.5 to 2 hours long, and there are 8 classes that make up the full program. They usually take place like one night a week kind of thing, or maybe a morning a week based on if it's a day program or an evening program. There are about 17 counties in the state of Wisconsin that are currently offering them through the University of Wisconsin Extension. So if people are interested in learning which counties, we also have a website they could go to. I can give you that web address, or maybe, Larry, you could put it up on your your page.
I think Jill may already have it up on our page, or Malik may have it up on the page already. But go ahead anyway.
Yeah, okay. Do you want me just to say it out loud right now?
Sure thing.
Okay. It's FYI, as in for your information. So FYI dot UWEX dot EDU / then it's RTC program, which is Raising a Thinking Child program, RTC program. So FYI.UWEX.EDU/RTC program.
And it is over many counties in Wisconsin, so there's probably one near almost everyone's area.
Well, and I would invite people that if you don't see, well, right now it looks like the fall classes aren't quite listed yet. I'm looking at the site right now. So we'll be getting those up soon, I'm sure. But if you see, you'll see some names and numbers of people there, and you can certainly call any one of them to help you find something in your county, or people can call me. That would be fine, too. I'm Sue Allen at 608-297-3139, 608-297-3139. I'd be happy to help guide you to a program close to you.
Excellent. And we'll make sure that it's posted up on our Facebook page. All that information is on our Facebook page. And Malik's giving me a thumbs up. Yeah, I got that.
Good. That's great.
So yeah. There we go.
Yeah.
Well, Barbara,
I'm sorry to interrupt, but I should say that the classes are for the parents. Mm-hmm. And they often offer child care, sometimes a family meal beforehand, child care throughout. So the children are not in the class with the parents, but there's a pretty great workbook that every parent gets. And we do some work in that book during the class, and then they take it home and they interact with their children and begin using the problem-solving approach immediately. And so normally within a few weeks you can start seeing the results of that at home with your own kids.
That is
now basically very cool. It's for younger children.
Yes, it's for parents with children age 4 to 7.
But parents who have older children, sometimes the older child plays teacher and reads questions from the workbook to the 4 or 5-year-old with supervision from the parents. So the older children can learn the approach without thinking it's for them. So you see, they're the teacher.
Yeah.
But they're learning how to think that way by asking the questions in the workbook to the younger children.
Yeah.
So they're not excluded.
Is there, Kathy on Facebook posted and wondered if... does this approach work with children with attachment disorder?
Interesting you should ask that. A group in New Jersey actually did some research with Raising a Thinking Child and found that initially the reaction was, I'm not a good parent, I must not be a good parent if I don't do this. And once they started seeing the reaction and how their children responded, the attachment got stronger, the bonding got stronger. So they were very, very pleased with that, and they presented at a conference. If anyone wants to email me, I can send them a copy of that.
Excellent. I know we have your contact information up on our Facebook page, so excellent. We had a Michelle email to ask how, and you sort of touched on this, but how can parents use this approach with teenagers? Is it different because they're more reluctant to engage?
Well, the skills are the same, and some get to be a little more sophisticated. I have a book called Raising a Thinking Preteen, which is for kids up to age 12. But the children, the skills that they do starting at about age 8 are good for life. We have research with the elderly even. And it's a skill that we call means, ends, or sequential thinking. And what we do is we ask the child to tell a story from the time, for example, a boy moves into a new neighborhood, he doesn't have any friends, he wants to make lots of friends, and the story ends up with him having lots of friends. And the child fills in the middle, and we look for his ability to plan sequence steps. What do I do first? What do I do second? What obstacles might get in the way of reaching my goal? how long might it take? Problem solving sometimes takes time. And we teach those skills in a program called it's Raising a Thinking Preteen in the book, in that book. It's not published recently, so it would, you know, it's available on Amazon.com or my website.
And I can add that I worked with teenagers for a long time in my life up to this point. And I tell you, this problem-solving approach is what we would use. And we would use it with young people in not only thinking about their home situations, but also thinking about community situations and helping young people become engaged as contributing citizens. And that's so important as kids go from children to preteens to teens to adults. So really, my sense is that this approach is universal. It is very human. It's very much about human relationships and helping each other come up with best solutions. And in fact, I find that it even works at home with my husband. and I would say vice versa. He probably uses it more on me than I do on him, because I tend to be the one that gets emotionally a little upset about things, and he'll be like, you know, here's some questions for you. And I'll be like,
yeah,
okay,
you know, everyone likes to think for themselves, whether they're 2 or 92. And I can tell you a great story of a parent, a mother who was very shy and having arguments with her fellow secretary. She was working during the day, and you know, they'd say, how do you expect me to do my work and your work? And they would really go at it. And after a few weeks of guiding her child to think for himself, she said to the secretary, you know, we have a problem here, and I need your help to solve it. And they started making a project, and they came up with solutions, and today they're best friends.
Oh, what a great story.
Because instead of, you know, me, the leader of the group, suggesting what she should say to her, she came up with that herself.
Talking today with Myrna Schur, who is the author of Raising a Thinking Child, and Sue Allen, family living educator from Marquette County UW Extension, about dealing with conflicts between your kids. Time for another call or two at 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on our Facebook page at The Larry Mueller Show. I don't remember if I've mentioned this in a past show with you, but my daughter went to Montessori school through kindergarten, and they had a peace corner or a peace table that was off to the side. And if kids would, you know, sort of get into tiffs about this or that, they would say, okay, it's time for you two to go to the peace table and talk about this.
Well, that's a very good idea if they have the skills to do that. I don't know if I ever mentioned this, but we have a program for the classroom as well. It's called I Can Problem Solve, and we have that for preschool through grade 6. And if I could give my website,
sure thing,
and look at it and get some information on that.
Please do.
It's just www.thinkingchild, one word, thinkingchild.com.
Thinkingchild.com. There we go.
Yeah.
And we'll make sure we have that up on our Facebook page as well. Malik will get that up, I'm sure. How do you feel about kids having lots of scheduled activities during the summer? Does this really create problems, or?
If it's Monday, it has to be tennis day, right?
Well, actually, my daughter has tennis today right now, as a matter of fact.
Oh, I'm jealous. That's my passion. That's why I mentioned it. Well, you know, a lot of that depends on the child's tolerance. I have cousins whose kids crave doing a million different things, and others just find it too stressful. And you know, if the child is doing 5 different things, you sit down and write them out, and then let the child pick, you know, 2 or 3 of them, and let the child make the decision on which ones he's going to drop. And then talk to him about how he feels about that, and what his thinking is about that. And depending on how he responds would depend on what you say next. But You know, you don't want to insist that he drop or insist that he don't drop, you know, because of your needs. Sometimes parents, you know, meet their needs through their children, and that's what stresses their children. But again, it's the whole approach of letting the child do the thinking and feeling about it.
Well, she's got tennis today, and later on at 3 o'clock, her drum lesson.
Well, that doesn't sound like too much.
Some parents tell me that their child has a hard time coming up with options sometimes or different ideas, and so they feel that they want to, you know, maybe suggest this or suggest that just to kind of get them started. And Myrna, that's okay too once in a while, right?
I wouldn't give more than one or two because
right. You're
planning. He may not always come up with a solution at that moment. Either he's too emotional, he needs to calm down, or he really doesn't have the skills yet.
Mm-hmm.
But if you keep giving him solutions, he's going to, you know, depend on that. And,
right.
And what you're doing is you're planting a seed. Well, I don't have an answer right now. But he might have an answer later.
Yeah.
So, you know, it depends on the child, too.
Right, and the level to which he might be getting frustrated if he's being expected to come up with an answer. Maybe, well, here's one idea. Let's wait. And
we'll talk about the one he gives, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
How will that make so-and-so feel? What might happen if you do that? And if that happens, how will you feel?
Mm-hmm.
And then if it's all negative, I'll feel sad or I'll feel mad. Then I bet if you think really hard, you can think of one more way. That sometimes
works. Yeah.
Well, let's get one more caller in. Sarah in Eau Claire, thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to comment. My daughter goes to Noah's Ark Preschool here in Eau Claire, and the main curriculum they use has to do with the theme of peacemaking, and everything they do has to do with, you know, working out their problems amongst one another and working together to kind of learn in an exploratory way. And kindergarten teachers around town really even say they can tell and pick out Noah's Ark kids because they've been challenged to have these peacemaking skills
mm-hmm.
on their own. It just sounded a lot like your book.
Yeah, well, you know, it's a field now called social-emotional learning. And the organization in Chicago, it's called CASEL. That's another website
mm-hmm.
You might want to give out, CASEL.org. They have compiled programs that they have rated as what they call SELECT, Select, Social Emotional Learning, SELECT. And I Can Problem Solve is one of them. And their goal is to get social emotional learning into every classroom in the country. It's not an easy task, but they're working on it. They're trying. Again, in the way the world is today, you've got to start when kids are 2, 3, 4 years old getting to feel empathy.
Right.
And it's, you know, there are lots of programs out there now, and I Can Problem Solve and Raising a Thinking Child are among them. And it's really, I can't stress enough that yelling and spanking and threatening and punishing and telling kids what to do all the time only makes them angry and more frustrated and immune. They become immune. So I get yelled at. So I get spanked. So what? I get what I want.
Hmm.
You know, and
not just for the short term, but for the long term. The long term effects here are quite impressive as well. Is that right, Myrna?
Absolutely. We know that it lasts, from our research, at least through fifth grade. And you know, probably a lot longer than that.
Right. Contributes to reducing problems later on in life.
Well, we are out of time. It's been a great conversation.
We're just getting started.
Well, we'll have to have you back and do this again at some point. Thank you so much for being with us today.
Thank you, Larry.
Thank you, Larry, and happy problem solving.
All right. Thank you so much. Well, I tell you what, it's been a lot of fun today. Talking with Myrna Schur, developmental psychologist from Drexel University, and her book, again, Raising a Thinking Child, Sue Allen, family living educator from Marquette County, UW Extension, Wisconsin Certified Prevention Specialist. And again, as Sue was saying, go online. We'll have this up on our Facebook page, but you can go online and find out where these classes are being held and when they're being held and sign up for them. We have that information on our Facebook page. Well, you know, summer's a fun time. There's lots of wonderful places and things to do and people to see all throughout Wisconsin. And we're going to talk about that next with Mike Beno, editor of Our Wisconsin. You stay with us.